Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette on this very last day of 2025. December 31st. I hope it's been a great year for you and that you're looking forward to 2026. Let's get started here on the front page. There's a huge picture with giant letters that says, Fantastic Finish. Quite colorful. And it shows Miles Scott hoisting the Music City Bowl trophy and MVP Luke Altmaier at his side. The Illini celebrates its 30-28 win against Tennessee in Tuesday's game in Nashville, Tennessee. David Alano's walk-off 29-yard field goal gave the Illini their second straight bowl win. And that is going to be picked up, I'm sure, in the sports section. But let's get started with the very top of the page, which is about from Rantoul. Rantoul man arrested in fatal Urbana hit and run. Hearing today will determine if Buford remains jailed or goes free, pending trial by Luke Taylor. After a Rantoul man was arrested for his alleged involvement in a crash that led to the death of an Urbana woman over a week ago, members of the victim's family said they feel relief. Now they want to see justice served. I don't hold no grudges. I just want to see justice done because my child was wrongfully killed, said LaShonda Smith, the mother of 22-year-old Aurora Taylor. Ms. Taylor was originally identified as Perry Lee Jr., but friends and family say the individual no longer went by that name. Multiple members of Ms. Taylor's family appeared at the Champaign County Courthouse on Tuesday for an arraignment hearing for 31-year-old James Buford, who was arrested Monday night in connection with the hit and run. He was charged with reckless homicide, leaving the scene of a personal injury accident involving a death and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. If convicted of all offenses, Buford could be facing up to 34 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Dorothy Smith, Ms. Taylor's grandmother, said it's been hell since she learned of her granddaughter's death. After learning of the arrest, I was able to go to bed and get some rest last night, Smith said. But then in the morning I woke up, and she was still gone. Urbana and University of Illinois police responded to the corner of Green Street and Matthews Avenue at around 2:13 a.m. December 20th after a U of I squad car was struck by a vehicle speeding the wrong way down Green Street. The vehicle, a red Buick Verano, spun off the road after impact and onto a sidewalk northeast of the intersection where five individuals were preparing to enter the crosswalk. Only one of the individuals was struck, but Assistant State's Attorney Eileen Keeley said other witnesses described being only a few feet away from the car. Both the individual who was struck, later identified as Ms. Taylor, and the U of I police officer were transported to a hospital. Ms. Taylor was later pronounced dead at 9:44 a.m. that day. The officer had minor injuries, Keeley said. Surveillance footage obtained from nearby buildings as well as the U of I squad car shows one individual exiting the Verano and fleeing on foot. Officers recognized Buford in the footage from previous contact with him. The Verano was registered to Buford's ex-girlfriend, who told police she had loaned it to him for two days earlier. Inside the vehicle, police found a pill bottle that listed the defendant's name as well as a 9mm handgun. Data obtained from the vehicle system said that Verano was traveling at 52 miles per hour up until seconds before the actual crash. Champaign County Judge Rhonda Holloman ordered that Buford would be detained in the Champaign County Jail overnight until a hearing on Wednesday morning to determine whether he will continue to be detained until the resolution of this case. Family members of Ms. Taylor say funeral arrangements are still in the works and details will be shared when they are available. I'm just glad he's finally caught and justice is served, said Perry Lee, Ms. Taylor's father. May God bless my family. Continuing on with the front page, from Champaign, from the city of Champaign Township, report strides likely funded through April. Board to question supervisor hopefuls at January 6th meeting by Jana Wiersema. The city of Champaign Township's low barrier shelter previously estimated to be at risk of closing in early 2026 is now expected to make it through April or even June. While earlier projections raised concerns that Stride's shelter might exhaust funds by February of 2026, updated analysis based on October and November actuals show this is not the case, Deputy Township Supervisor Corinne Jordan wrote in a report to the Township Board. Average monthly spending for October and November was a little over $145,000, and projected spending for December to June is about $1,700,700, she said. This means Stride's shelter was sufficient funding to continue operations through at least April of 2026, even with adjustments, she said. Jordan attributed to the improved forecast. November, as multiple grant disbursements came, though, she also noted that restricted grants of $110,000 for medical respite care and expanding beds during winter must be used by June. Funding is available until April of 2026 or longer, especially if restricted grant dollars are strategically applied, she wrote. With modest spending adjustments, particularly utilities and activity-specific supplies, Strides can realistically sustain operations through June of 2026. Both categories were among the shelter's major cost drivers for the month of November, with Jordan reporting about $5,000 for utility expenses and $12,350 for activity-specific items such as hygiene kits, medical supplies, linens, and guest food. Medical and hygiene supplies spending continues to trend higher than anticipated, reflecting increased shelter demand, she noted. However, the most expensive category continues to be personal cost, with salaries, payroll taxes, and benefits totaling over $93,000 in November. Jordan reported that the shelter operated at a net deficit of a little over $47,000 for the month, with expenditures totaling approximately $140,000 and revenues only coming in at about $92,700. November revenues came from multiple grant deposits, including approximately $18,800 from rapid rehousing funds for July, August, and September, $25,700 from emergency and transitional housing funds for August and September, $15,900 from the supporting municipalities for asylum seeker service grant program for April and May, $32,250 from the Local Housing and Homeless Innovations Program for July, August, and September. Jordan's report can be found at cctownship.com agendas/minutes/ as part of the meeting materials for the Town Board's January 6th session. The agenda also includes a time for the board to interview candidates for Township Supervisor, Charlene Murray, Interim Executive Director at Strides, and Mike Ingram, Chair of the Champaign County Democratic Party, have both applied to fill the vacancy left by Kyle Patterson in November. Murray's and Ingram's applications are included in the meeting's material. Among other things, both candidates were asked to share their thoughts on Strides. Ingram wrote that stakeholders need to come together and discuss the best way to serve the individuals who need this kind of help the Stride provides. There are so many layers of government and various entities involved in the continuum of care that exists here, and frequently they are stuck doing triage with whatever resources that they can cobble together, Ingram said. But they all agree that we need bed space and we need programming. We cannot kick people out in the middle of winter and say, sorry, funding ran out. So whatever comes after, whether it's a nonprofit model or a gender-separated space or a rebuild, we need to make sure we get our people through the winter. Murray wrote in her application that Strides is well on its way to operational stability due to a revisioning plan that is being implemented at the shelter. She added that the twice-failed referendum to raise tax revenue for the shelter's benefit doesn't owe its outcome to people not liking the homeless. It didn't pass because the shelter was operationally dysfunctional and there was no plan, she said. There's a plan now, and I'd like to collaborate with the community on addressing homelessness. Some of Murray's ideas include relocating the shelter, establishing a mid-barrier shelter in addition to maintaining a low-barrier facility, having separate facilities for men and women, and transitioning to a hybrid 501c3 model in the hopes of accessing additional funding streams. According to Township Attorney Thomas Yu, the recommended interview procedure for the board is to interview the two candidates one at a time in alphabetical order. Candidates will be given up to 5 minutes to make a statement of candidacy, followed by town board questions, he wrote. While a candidate is being interviewed, the other candidate be excused to wait in the lobby. The board could appoint a supervisor during the next week's meeting or postpone the decision until its January 13th session, he added. The appointment will not take effect until the chosen individual is sworn into the position, which would take place at a subsequent meeting. And the last article on the front page is a My Turn article by Mike Carroll with the heading, A Grump's New Year's Resolutions for 2026. I've never been a huge fan of New Year's resolutions. They're kind of self-inflicted traps for failure. I remember wanting to lose weight back in the late 70s. My state's attorney, investigator Jan Ray, also wanted to lose weight. In fact, we needed to lose weight as both of us could barely squeeze into a large van. So we both made a resolution in December to lose weight by April 1st of the coming new year. We even backed it up, with a $100 bet going to the one who lost the most weight. When that date finally came, we both weighed in at the Tuscola Grain Elevator. I had gained 28 pounds, and Jan had gained 34 pounds. We both got into the argument about whether I should get the $100, because I'd gained less weight. He wouldn't pay. Dismayed, I quit making resolutions for decades. But time for my self-improvement is shortening at a rather alarming rate, so I've decided to make resolutions again, the achievement of which might help to clear my name and burnish memories in my life. Resolution number one, quit belly aching so much. My friends increasingly call me El Gripo, and they say they're getting tired of me dragging them down into whatever slow of despondence I'm festering in. I know, but getting older, painful arthritis that makes me scream with the simplest movements, memory failure, no energy, sight and hearing leaving me, and did I mention toe fungus? It's hard to deal with it on a daily basis, never ceasing voyage of pain and discomfort. You wouldn't believe it, but hey, who's complaining? Plus, come on now, you people could help me with my negative Nelly nattering. Take our do-nothing, know-nothing, incompetent politicians. Can't you get your corrupt act together? And those Mad Max drivers riding my bumpers, honking, yelling at me to pull off the highway and take a nap, Grandpa. Is it too much to ask you hot-headed rabble-rousers to help me keep this resolution? After all, it takes a village. Resolution number two. Treat Becky better. I'm not sure this is humanly possible, given the objective fact that absolutely everything I do is for her, except for all that stuff I do for myself. But Becky insists it's not only possible, but better happen soon, or she's going to keep bugging me until I pop a gasket. Then whose fault will that be? Not mine. I've been married twice, and coincidentally have repeatedly heard this complaint from not only both wives, but sundry girlfriends. Concerned, I thought long and hard about the matter and finally concluded that the common denominator is, obviously not me, it's women. Something's wrong with them when it comes to me. Perhaps they're either missing a get real about the perfectibility of men, or they have a utopian, overdeveloped men can be perfected gene. Can't be me. At least that's my current working theory. Resolution number three, quit repeating old tall tales that bore everyone. This resolution will be difficult, as I have no new adventures and can't remember who or how many times I've told of my past adventures, but I'll try. How about this one? I don't think it's been told before, but if it has, please disregard and move on to someone else's article. I hopped a freight to San Diego, then rode camels through Central America, finally catching a skiff to Cuba, where we picked tobacco for El Capo de Largo. Have you heard this one? Anyway, one day, this Che Guevara revolutionary nut comes charging into the tobacco field, spraying bullets everywhere because, as I understand it, he thought capitalist pigs were stealing the national treasure of Cuba, being really good cigars. Engo and I fled the fighting by hitching a ride with a CIA agent on his super-secret hydro boat that had special markings to distinguish it from drug runner boats, thus avoiding vaporization from above. Are you sure you haven't heard this one? This is about the time the whole Bay of Pigs thing blew up in President Kennedy's face. I tried to tell the president that Engo and I had nothing to do with it. We were just there, caught in the middle of things, trying to make a living, picking leaves and scoring free Cohiba cigars. True, we did tell the CIA agent of the Ruskies' plan to bring nukes into Cuba. This intel came directly from Vladimir, a then KGB operative who now had cheese of Russia, who was cutting tobacco right along with us. He thought we were Che's mules and on his side, but we weren't. I mean, what a mess. Who was the president going to believe, Engo and me or the CIA creeps? He listened to them, not us. And look what happened. I'm just saying. If I repeat this story next week, that means this resolution is probably kaput on arrival. These are my resolutions for the coming year. As for your resolutions, my wish is that those of you blocking my path toward personal improvement will resolve to get out of my way. You know who you are. Continuing with some community news from Urbana by Jana Wiersema and the Urbana Police, Clerk Hurt in Circle K armed robbery on Christmas Eve. Police are seeking tips in an armed robbery late on Christmas Eve at a gas station near Carl Foundation Hospital that left the clerk injured. He remains hospitalized in stable condition, police said Tuesday morning. A GoFundMe that has been set up to help with his expenses described him as someone who loves to work and is always so sweet to his community and customers. He is known for his kindness, his smile, his kind gestures, and his outgoing energy. Officers were dispatched at 10:44 p.m. Wednesday to the Circle K at 507 West University for a report of a shooting with injuries and found the clerk with a gunshot wound. Police said the subject, whom they described as a man wearing a black jacket, black pants, sunglasses, and a face covering, was also using a stolen vehicle, which was later abandoned and recovered by the police. Anyone with information is asked to contact Urbana Police at 217-384-2320. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. And from Capital News by Peter Hancock in Springfield, education measures focus on AI in the classroom and immigrant rights from Springfield. Immigrant rights and artificial intelligence were two of the hot-button issues that influenced public education in 2025. They are also the subject of new education-related laws that will take effect at the start of the new year. The rights of non-citizen students, including those who are not lawfully present in the U.S., rose to the top of the education agenda as soon as President Donald Trump was sworn into his second term in January. The day Trump was inaugurated, the Department of Homeland Security rescinded a Biden administration policy that limited immigration enforcement actions in or near sensitive locations, such as schools, playgrounds, child care centers, and school bus stops. 2 days later, Illinois Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders issued what he called a non-regulatory guidance to local school officials, urging them to adopt policies spelling out how and when their staff could operate with federal immigration officials carrying out enforcement actions or seeking information from school officials. At the State House, the Democratic-controlled General Assembly also took action, passing bills intended to extend more legal protections to non-citizens living in Illinois. Among those was House Bill 3247, which passed the General Assembly in May and was signed into law August 15th. It prohibits schools from excluding or discouraging students from attending school or taking part in school, in school programs based on their immigration status or that of their parents or guardians. In the face of federal threats to our schools and students, our communities came together and organized to demand that our state leaders stand up for education for all Illinois children. Lawrence Benito, executive director of the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, said in a statement after the bill's final approval. While the right to safe and free public education remains under attack from Trump, the leaders in our states, Illinois was the opportunity to continue to uphold our values. The law specifically prohibits schools from requesting or collecting information from students, their parents, or guardians about their citizenship or immigration status, unless the information is required by state or federal law. It also prohibits schools from disclosing information about their immigration and citizenship status to any other person or entity, including immigration and law enforcement agencies, unless required to do so under federal law. Let's head on to the opinions piece by J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History. And there is a black and white photo of Clark Gable and Jeanette MacDonald, who star in San Francisco, 1936, which a 15-year-old Martha Vickness saw at what was then known as Grauman's Chinese Theater while on a secret trip to meet the King of Hollywood. The article is titled, A Teen's Daring Date with the King of Hollywood. A new word was entering America's vocabulary 90 years ago, teenagers. True, adolescents had been around since the dawn of time. Surprisingly, they weren't called teenagers until the 1930s, when researchers first noticed the demographic was emerging as a source of spending power. Tinseltown pounced on the prospect, targeting its movies and the stars who kept theater seats filled to them. In the case of one girl, Hollywood succeeded a little too well. 15-year-old Martha Vickness was, in her family's words, movie crazy, and she was in love, too. Not some passing crush on a high school jock, but a deeply passionate, intensely burning love. Martha was in love with the King of Hollywood. The minute he first appeared on the silver screen in 1931, Clark Gable made it his home. A popular actor from the start, his breakout role in 1934's It Happened One Night propelled him to superstardom. Women were drawn to his combination of rugged vitality and smooth, graceful charm. Men saw him as one of their own, a man's man. Martha dearly loved Gable. She spent hour after hour in her family's Brooklyn apartment writing hundreds of gushing letters to him. Although Gable never answered even one of them, she eventually believed that he loved her too. By the summer of 1936, she decided it was time that they went on a date. Although Martha may have viewed herself as a starlet material, nobody else did. She began to imagine that she was beautiful, her mother later told reporters, which she really isn't. She's what we call a mud gutter blonde. What she may have lacked in looks, the teenager more than made up for in moxie. If her king wouldn't come to her in Brooklyn, she would go to Hollywood for their first date. Her father had just received a $500 bonus for his military service in France during World War I. He spent $100 paying bills and stashed the remaining $400, worth almost $10,000 in today's currency, in a bureau drawer as savings. Martha secretly swiped it. Then, when her parents were at the American Legion ball one night, she tucked her 6-year-old brother Harold into bed and whispered, "I'm going to California. Don't tell anyone." And with that, she hopped on a plane and headed to Hollywood, and was probably disappointed when Gable wasn't waiting at the airport. Undeterred, Martha took a room at the posh Roosevelt Hotel, befitting her status as a starlet-to-be. Then she immediately went stargazing. It started with a visit to the Trocadero Cafe, where the head waiter pointed out Robert Taylor. Martha found him handsome enough, but no Clark Gable. She later spotted Joan Crawford. Her verdict? The actress really aren't much. They use too much mascara and grease paint. A shopping spree followed the next day, with $65 for an evening gown, a $7 pair of matching sandals, and a hat for $2. Daddy's money was going fast. The champagne cocktails cost $3.50, and I had to give the waiter a dollar tip. Think of it, she said. Martha finally got to see her beloved Gable the day after that. She bought a ticket at the legendary Grauman's Chinese Theater and watched him in San Francisco, his latest blockbuster, which she pronounced simply swell. Back in Brooklyn, the teen's parents had discovered Martha was missing. Six-year-olds aren't the most trustworthy confidants, with Harold after he blabbed. The father frantically called the American Legion in Los Angeles and shared his daughter's physical description. Members then fanned out looking for her. By the time they eventually caught up with her, Martha had blown through all but $6 of her father's money. Legionnaires chipped in and bought her a one-way ticket home. Forget it, was all indulgent Joseph Vickness said when reporters asked about his prodigal daughter. Her mother placed the blame squarely on Papa. That's the trouble. She's Daddy's girl. He's petted her entirely too much, she said, though she acknowledged that Martha was the best girl in the world. And what about the love-struck teenager herself? I had a swell time, she confessed when she was finally home and all was forgiven. Would she do it again, a reporter wanted to know. Maybe, Martha said, though with the caveat that she should think twice before any other such adventure. Her father may have been surprisingly forgiving, but his compassion didn't extend beyond the family circle. He later sued the airline for the $167 cost of the plane ticket, claiming that it had sold the ticket to a minor. Vickness lost both that case and the appeal. There's a special section under entertainment called Moments That Popped, 2025, a year in review, and there are several monthly descriptions of the things that happen over the year. So I'll start and see how far we get. It says, Moments That Stopped, A Ring for Taylor, An Ill-Timed Kiss Cam, whatever 6-7 means, and more. Dictionaries define things. It's their job. So when Dictionary.com pronounced 6-7 as their 2025 word of the year, you'd think they would have, well, defined it. But no, we're all still trying to figure out exactly what it means. They told us of this year's, well, linguistic time capsule. But that's just how pop culture works, isn't it? Who's to explain why parents alone in their cars were suddenly singing Up, Up, Up from that K-pop Demon Hunters song? Or why in the Venn diagram of pop culture and zoology it was the capybara that emerged victorious and beloved? Goodbye, Mu Deng, you're adorable, but so 2024. Despite our new obsessions, though, some things remain constant, by which we mean Taylor Swift and Beyoncé, of course. It seems like every year gets bigger for Swift, but in 2025 she put a bow, or a ring on it, with Travis Kelce. Announcing your English teacher and your gym teacher are getting married. As for Beyoncé, the musical goddess finally won the Best Album Grammy that she long deserved, and on tour introduced a new force, her daughter Blue Ivy. So from the inexplicable to the familiar, here's our annual, highly selective journey down pop culture memory lane. I'm going to have to stop here for our first half of the News Gazette, but maybe we can pick it up when I get back.